And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer, and tonight I'm joined by two of the most intrepid Starfinders on this side of the galaxy.
Hi, I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
And I'm Vanessa Hoskins, Miss Punch Girl.
You will always write Code Switch in our heart, James.
In our hearts.
And tonight we have a type of episode we actually haven't really done in a while. We've had a lot of really great interviews for the past couple months. We're a monthly show. And tonight we're going back and hitting that like reviews part in our show. And we're reviewing a... I don't know what to call it, a new Paizo product. It's been out for like 3 months now.
The most recent Starfinder product.
There we go. The most recent Starfinder
non-adventure
hardcover.
Yes.
Yeah, but hey, you know what? At least we got to it before the next one comes out, before Galaxy Exploration Manual.
So hey, we're doing good. It.
We're current. We got it. And that book is Alien Archive 4, which is why the name of this show is Alien Archive Forever. The number four ever.
Wait, does that mean that this is it? This is the last Alien Archive?
No, because when we get to Alien when we inevitably get to Alien Archive 5, I will come up with a reason to like have a 5 in the name. Maybe like you know that they had the Weeby Goblins and then like they replaced one of the things with a 5. Like that's probably what we'll do.
I think it would just be Alien Archive 5x5, but we can talk about that next time. Let's talk about this book.
Yes. So, James. That tell us about Alien Archives and their glory.
So the Alien Archive line this time has, I didn't count the monsters or creatures, but I do remember it has, I think, 8 playable races, including some things like Copaxi that you might have seen in society. It also includes a race graph system, kind of like an augmentation system. So you can like steal your favorite parts from certain other species.
Yes, we can cut off your favorite player race's arm and we can sew it onto your second favorite player race and it'll work. It'll be great.
Honestly, from a balancing standpoint, I think that's pretty smart because then you can basically take the idea like Vesk are the best at defense because they have that really cool armor trait and just be like, you know what? I'm going to take it as a cybernetic upgrade. Yeah, it costs my character some points, but you can still get it and you're not gated by the fact that it's like, well, only this one race has this one, you know, race trait and you're stuck. It's like, oh, no,
maybe,
I want it.
Maybe
give me them cheek pouches, okay? I want adorable cheek pouches.
Maybe you can ask our Fly 3 or Die GM if you can, like, find a hobgoblin and cut his ears off and then you can have the armor training racial trait.
Oh, no. You're not bringing that up, are you?
Oh, I already did. It's here.
Okay. So what he's talking about is we're playing Fly 3 or Die. I have a halfling vanguard and I found defensive striker, which is amazing because it nullifies the penalty on cleave and lunge, which are two feats I was super planning on taking, and it would just be amazing to always be able to cleave and lunge as much as I wanted. It's a super powerful, awesome feat. It is
this
gated...
is my favorite part of the story. Here it is, the funny part.
So I'm looking this thing up, and it is gated by like armor training trait. I'm like, armor training trait? That's weird. So I look up armor training. I see soldier styles and guard style has a thing called armor training. Great. I'll just be a one level in soldier just to get it. That's fine. That's cool. It gives me a lot of perks for being a soldier anyway. And then I'm like, wait a second, that's not what they mean. The page it's on is on the Hobgoblin page and they're talking about the armor training Hobgoblin racial trait.
Yep. Doesn't say racial trait, but it's that one.
Which is an alternate racial trait. It's not even the one they intend you to have. It's like, or you could trade it out for this one thing. And if you do, then you could qualify for this feat. What?
Why not just say it's a species-specific feat and not confuse what?
Mm-hmm. It's so weird.
Or list Hobgoblin as a prerequisite. Now, like, granted, if you wanted to future-proof it and, you know, you add armor training somewhere else, cool. The problem is that the armor training alternate racial trait, in terms of its rules, is identical to the AC bonus racial trait that Vesk get.
Yes, but Vesk, it's the same.
but the Vesk racial trait isn't called armor training. It's called armor savant, so Vesk can't qualify for it.
It's so weird. I don't know what's happening here.
There's a reason why I had Vanessa bring up this story, because this is going to be something that is a theme from my feedback for this book, because this book is cool. Like, every Alien Archive that's ever come out has been filled with player options. There are playable species. There are new items. There's new equipment. And this book takes bigger risks than any other book I've seen in the Alien Archive line. And I'm pretty sure that that's something we'll talk about more when we start talking about the monsters. There is a better spread of content for players in this book than any other Alien Archive. The problem is that you can see that they were tight on space, and so that there are places where there are missing rules that make some of these options dubious on how they work. And we'll talk about that later. Because the options themselves are fine, the peripherals struggle. But let's get into the monsters before we get there.
Sure. How do you want to start?
I think we should pick some of our favorites, because our favorites are going to make us really excited. Do you have a favorite monster, James?
I'm looking for its name now, and it's not favorite. It's I hate it, and I wish I never saw it.
Oh, no!
Then why don't we have Vanessa go first so that we can start on a positive?
That sounds like a smarter thing to do. So my favorite is the animated quartz swarm. I don't know about favorite, but I love it. Okay. Mm-hmm. As folks probably know, I am a sucker for swarms, in my adventure writing. I am a sucker for constructs. It is both. It is a bunch of little pieces of animated quartz, and they recommend using it. They said they're always created, they're not natural. They are definitely a intentional construct. And what's really cool is you can put like a beautiful chandelier in a lobby entryway that is also part of your security system as this thing descends on intruders. It is so cool. And just like they like to do and put like little extra bits of player rule information that you can use, they come with a cool quartz refractor armor upgrade that gives you energy resistance 10, but only against laser weapons. But still, you get bejeweled armor and protection against one of the most common types of weapons in the game. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that is super neat. And it's also a really shiny picture, and I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, it's super cool.
One of the things that I think is Starfinder's strengths, and I think we talked about this a little on the episode where we had the Jasons on talking about the future of like the adventure line, essentially, is that Starfinder isn't a game like, you know, Firefly, where it just exists in the future. Like, it's got a really robust past in the Pathfinder role-playing game and like the content of like the Galarian Age. This book actually takes a couple monsters from Pathfinder and it gives them Starfinder equivalents, which for me, I wish that Starfinder would do this more often. Mm-hmm. Specifically, this book has a monster that is very well known by Pathfinder players who played second edition or first edition often. It is the Brain Collector. It's great. Brain Collectors are basically these horse size aberrations that look like crabs, but they have like sores on their back where they rip people's brains out and they put them in, and like they get special benefits as they take people's brains. The art. The art on this one, if you want to show this one,
I was just showing everyone. It's so good.
It's on page 16. It's fantastic. Like, this is like, it is essentially the same thing that we've seen in Pathfinder. This is the best Brain Collector art I've ever seen. I think their technical name is like, their species name is the Nethragos or whatever. Brain Collector. Brains. It's great. I love it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, they're part of the Dominion of the Black, so they're part of that, like, weird space between the stars sort of creepiness, and they have those alien, otherworldly sort of logic that they approach things. They're a chaotic, evil creature, so of course, their logic is our what? They're iconic. If you played a lot of Pathfinder, especially around the Numerian sites, I'm sure you saw a Brain Collector at least once. They are creepy, they are wonderful, they are crab-like, and they are gross.
Yes. So I think we've talked about some positive stuff. So James, I'm assuming what you want to yell about is the thing you told us that was on page 46, right?
I guess there's a lot of things. So I think things that I hate don't mean things that I dislike. There's things that you like to hate, like enemies, foes, or the QU.
Isn't the camel then?
No, that camel was, oh God. If my dad used to smoke Camel cigarettes, and those things just look like the mascot for Camel cigarettes. I can't get that up my head. It's a terrible connection. But QU, which are aberrations that just kind of are like teeth with just like hollow holes that go and ambush people as they pop skeletons out of their body and just,
Oh, these things are terrible. Oh. And there's the art is the most evil looking little bunny that has just been destroyed.
Yeah, that's its hiding form before it just unfurls a skeleton and goms you.
Gross.
That's the one that looks like it's like right out of like a Call of Cthulhu adventure. It's got like miles for eyes. Like that's great. I love it.
Yeah, it is terrifying.
Yeah, this book has a lot of stuff that's like dead space creepy, and it's great. Do you have another one that you like, Vanessa?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Would you like me to go first, or do you got it ready?
No, it's fine. I'll pull it up.
Cool.
I love so many of the constructs in here. I'm such a construct nerd.
I
One
feel
of the
that.
things that I love that is a construct is how this book has also leaned into a lot of the tropes that are out there, things that it may have missed. And they have actual, honest to goodness, Terminators in this book, and it's super cool. Oh, I'm going to talk about two things in a row, if that's okay, because they're right next to each other, and
Sure,
I'm
go
super
for it.
excited about both. So it's the Infiltration Robot, and the Infiltration Robot comes in two forms, the Terminator original series and the Terminator 2 series, the T-1000. You've got your standard, I've got a metal skeleton and a fake, like, bit of synth skin on the outside to make me look like my normal self, and infiltrate other cultures, and you have your full-on nanotech liquid metal version, and they're both terrifying, and I'm so glad they're statted up for Starfinder.
It's so good. Yeah, totally. So what's the other one you wanted to talk
The
about?
other one is a page before that, and it is, of course, the robot dragon. I love constructs. I love constructs.
It's on like the front cover of this book. Like it is this is like Paizo was like, "We know you want this. Take it."
It's so
Yes.
Yu-Gi-Oh swag too. I love it.
It's
Yu-Gi-Oh
Red Eyes Black
swag.
Metal Dragon.
It is. It's
It
so
is.
good.
But it's like I just love the Clockwork Dragon. I got to write the Steam Dragon in Pathfinder First Edition, so getting a robot dragon now is so cool.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, if I ever get a chance to write a CR 12 plus dragon in an adventure, I am putting a robot dragon in there. It is going in this adventure because I freaking love them.
That is great. I approve.
I honestly can't think of a better creature to be defending, like, I don't know, an Abadarian vault or something. Then you're like, oh, here's a vault full of riches. Also, we have a dragon. It's a robot dragon. It follows our commands, but whatever. It's a dragon on our horde. It makes
It's a
sense.
dragon.
This is its horde right now.
Yes.
That's right.
All of your data bits are mine. I have a hoard of Bitcoin. So I am a big so the, like as James mentioned, Alien Archives has a lot of player species options, and one of the ones that I thought was just the high concept for this one is just so cool is on page 22, Vanessa. It's the Coppaxi. The Coppaxi are basically living coral. Like they are a player race that is made out of coral, and it's so cool. Like they evolve from these like little
Oh,
like these little
yeah.
coral dudes, and they build up these bodies, and like their entire like structure is just the little coral dudes like moving them, and the art is just so good. Like they're so pretty and they're so awesome. They're so terrifying. They have no faces. They don't
They have
need
no
them. They have
faces.
blind sense.
Well,
Yeah.
but the other cool thing about them is actually they're a really good species for like a new player or a player that can never make up their mind, because one of their abilities is every time they level up, they can redo all of their previous levels choices as if they had a mnemonic editor. So
Yep.
if you choose something and like you're like, okay, I hit level 3 and I took this feat, and then you get to level 4 and you're like, I have never once used it, and honestly, I'm not sure I ever will. You can just retrain it, and you're not sitting there going, ooh, is it one of my very few retrains I get? Like, nope, you get it for free. So it's great for that person who keeps changing their characters. If Lauren Sieg ever decides to play Starfinder, I am going to recommend a Coppaxi because she can never make a solid long-term decision on her characters. She's constantly
Now
retraining and going in another direction.
I'm just imagining Samich, but as a coral lady.
Probably still works. Still a mean left hook.
Shatters.
I do like also the Coppaxi from a lore perspective because they evolved and the things that they evolved from are still around, like directly, and they
Oh.
exploited them to get their technological prowess and basically made their ancestor nearly extinct. They're unintelligent coral, but they have like psychic power. And
Wow.
it's like, man, what if fossil fuel was, you know, your great ancestor? It's super brutal.
It is extremely brutal. I agree. Good stuff. Did you
Very
have a
cool.
monster you want to talk about, James?
I guess it's a monster. I like when they start building out. Like, I know new things are cool, but in Pathfinder, there's such a variety of different types of creatures. Like, in this, I'm excited for this one because we get more psychopomps. Psychopomps are one of those outsiders that were kind of there in other RPGs, but then kind of got, I think you, there's more uniqueness in them in Pathfinder than I saw in other games. And continuing to expand that, I think, is very cool. Also, the art looks really weird, but not like horrifying, and I enjoy that.
Yeah, it's very otherworldly. It's kind of creepy without being like gross between the stars creepy. It's got its own nice psychopomp creepiness to it.
It looks it looks like if you were to give a body to an Enya song played with a theremin.
Okay, all right, I can dig it. The really cool player rule they give us is actually a new spell called Soul Reap, which is a mystic spell, fourth level, and it's basically fireball for undead only. It's like, hey, all you undead, guess what? Get screwed. You're going to the boneyard.
Which isn't a great spell until you adventure on Eox.
Well, I mean, it depends on the adventure, right? Like, but if you know that you're adventuring on Eox or some other thing that's... If you're in, like, the creepy AP and there's a lot of undead, you might be like, I'm getting this spell. Or a soul, or like a spell gem or something with it, right? For just in case.
I'm just imagining our friend Tom's techno-mystic just charging through, dropping these at his feet, going, die! Because he totally do that. Going along the same lines with James, one Pathfinder has a very strong influence on Starfinder. I mentioned this before. You know, we have there's brand new psychopomps. There's the monster that I said earlier that has now officially left my brain, and it really makes me upset. And another thing they added in this book that they is from Pathfinder, but like this is Alien Archive 4. This is the first time we're getting Agathians, like. Because Agathians have been in the rulebook since Alien Archive 1. They're one of the subtypes that you can add to summon creatures, but like they've never actually written an Agathian. And this book has two of them. And going along the same, like all the Agathians in Pathfinder First Edition, like resemble Earth monsters, like the Vulpinol are foxes, the Leonols are lions. This one has like a Vicanol, which is like this four-armed half monkey, half elf with like a whip tail guy. And then the other one is like this like half lion, half baboon, half guy with the most majestic hair you've ever seen guy. Like, and they're like They're Agathians. They're residents of the Nirvana, of one of the good aligned planes. They go around, they promote good, and they try to bring enlightenment to people. Like that's what it is. Like there's nothing really different there, but like the high concept for what an alien animal based Agathian looks like is great. Mm-hmm. These are monsters that I could see being brought in Pathfinder 1 and Pathfinder 2nd edition, I should say. Because like they exist, you know what I mean? Like they're a thing. Unfortunately, they have player rules with them. The player rules are medicinals. There are no rules for how to buy them. There's no price. There's no item level. Like, it says they follow the rules for medicinals on page 231 to 232 of the Starfinder Core Rulebook. But, like, and I checked the back to see if it was in an index. Like, there's no rules for, like, what they cost. So, like...
There's a table that got dropped somewhere.
There must be. And it's got to be that gorgeous baboon man's fault.
Oh, gorgeous baboon man.
It's gotta be his fault.
Seeing gorgeous baboon man, that kind of reminds me of Rakshasas. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Like, it's just like the anti-Rakshasa, or at least design-wise.
Yes.
So really quick, before we get too far away from it, our very own Kitsune Warlock, Dustin Knight says, the psychopomp awkward whisper. So, are we still ignoring Eox? And Mind E-Blown says, headcanon, psychopomps on Eox are like demons on any other world. Adventurers are sent out to deal with the murderous creatures. Which, honestly, I love. Imagine doing an Eoxian campaign where everyone's undead, and you're like, there's a psychopomp over there in that bunker. We gotta go get him. They're murdering all of our friends.
And the thing is there are enough playable undead in Starfinder that you could totally do that. There was one in Alien Archive 3 that was basically Bo'Rai, but not. And then there's the Bo'Rai. You could do it. Like, just go off and have it a dead venture. Be dead people.
Dustin wants a three-book Eox AP.
You know what? That could be the Starfinder version of Hell's Vengeance.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
You were thinking Way of the Wicked, weren't you?
I almost said Way of the Wicked. I came really close.
Came really close. All right. All right, cool. So, James, I know you have strong feelings about at least one other monster in this book.
So I have very strong feelings about two of the class graph options specifically. There's one feeling that I have that's just of deja vu. There was a creature in the Adventure Path, the second Dead Sons volume, called a Skyfisher, which was like a jellyfish that went into the sky and it blended in with the clouds and it would sweep down and take people and like eat them. And I'm trying to find the name of it here, but there's a very, very similar creature, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing because it is a different monster. It is different art. It has different rules. But I looked at it and I did a double take and was like, is this still a thing? But like crabs evolved like 5 times. So I mean, nah.
I've said this in the No Direction Discord before. I think that like on a cosmic level in the Starfinder universe, like yes, the thing where evolution tends to create crabs is probably a thing on Galarian, but I think that across worlds with life, there's definitely like a tendency for things to evolve humanoid traits like hands and like bipedal movement, which is really fun. It would be an interesting like almost like a field of study for like a biohacker, like everything's crabs and then there's a little like, everything's people.
Yeah, it's called the Karen wheel in this book, and it doesn't fly, it does burrow into the ground, but it still has ambush traits.
No, listen, now
everything's tentacles.
Now you can use the one from Dead Sons to go from above and the one from Alien Archive to go from below and sandwich the players between the awful.
Oh, no. My God, you're so dead. So dead. That thing slaps so hard.
It's like that time that you threw the and when we were doing like the really early Starfinder before they had the Alien Archive rules out, James threw like a scorpion lady, the Galaxa brew at us.
Oh,
like
a Tablilu.
Yeah. And like Pathfinder monsters have completely different math that's busted in Starfinder, and we all just got poisoned and died.
Yeah, they could have passed the DC 30 fortitude saves.
Oh, jeez.
It was awful.
It got busted real hard.
Yeah, unless you specifically came with antitoxin for that venom, like, yeah, you're gone.
Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. It was just a playtest, and it's like, well, try some conversions, and I didn't. It wasn't good.
Yeah,
you can't use it. Nope, no bueno. So speaking of like crazy monsters, I know this is another adventure volume that it's a pick me up because I've seen it before, but, the Supenga on page 120, it's like an armadillo, but its body is made out of flowers and it's wonderful. Like,
aww, it's kind of adorable.
Yeah. The first one is adorable. Then you go to the 122 and it's like, hiss, and you're like, ah,
no, I think they're cute. Aww. But,
this is interesting too, because like a couple of monsters in this book are like this. They have stats for using the creature companion rules in Alien Archive 3 for a whole bunch of different monsters. So if you wanted to have one of these gorgeous plants as your buddy, like you could do it. You could take all the feats and be like, I am riding a plant armadillo, which is honestly easier in this game than it ever was in Pathfinder First Edition to get a plant animal companion, companion.
How did I not realize what this thing was? I saw the art and I went, yep, plant. And then it just didn't click in my head.
Mm.
Yeah. It's beautiful. That's what it is.
Yeah,
it's
really cool. It's gorgeous. It's
Speaking of beautiful, there is one bit of art and creature that stood out. It's one of the few, you know, good aligned creatures we have in here, which is cool. I'm glad there's some. That I am astounded at their honesty. It's like they got to the naming process and said, let's just tell them what it is. And it is the sapient purple orb.
Yes. The sapient purple orb is
what
great.
Is it? It's a purple orb and it's sapient. That's all you need to know. It doesn't have an unpronounceable name, or you're like, it's that thing that's like, I don't know what it's called. It's like, no, it's the sapient purple orb. Well, okay, sure, that's what it is, but what's its name? No, that is its name.
Yes.
And it probably chose it.
And the thing is, like, I think sometimes about when you look at like human settlements and it's like, it's Stone Creek. I'm like, really? That's the name of the settlement? And I think, what human named this? Some human saw this thing, wrote Sapient Purple Orb, and people were like, well, we need to give it a better name. And the person who originally found one of these things, or at least the human, is like, no, that's its name. It is a Sapient Purple Orb, and it is my friend, and I will not have you disrespect it.
I mean, it's everything. It's the description. I love dumb names like this. It's so good.
My favorite thing about these creatures is that they have a language, and it's called Orbian.
Orbian!
How did I miss that part?
It's great. It's so funny. Like they are arguably smarter than the average human. They have an intelligence modifier of +1, and they were like, we are the orbs. We are orbular in shape. Our language is Orbian, and it's great. I adore them. They're so great.
No, I stick to my headcanon. That is once again the human naming it. They're like, they have their own language. They don't really have a name for it because it's just their language. I guess I'll call it Orbian? They're orbs? Sure, that makes sense. It's Orbian. And other scholars are like, come on, you can't come up with something more interested than Orbian? Like, no, that's the language. It's Orbian.
It's great.
Okay, so, I guess that's what we'll call it.
You want to hear another name that's very literal, that is way more horrifying? Go down one page to 106.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah, the SCP come to life monster, the scene. It is... like, whoever wrote this monster and got this, like, there's an SCP, the Secure Contain Protect Foundation, that is, like, this monster to a T. And so, essentially, it's a monster that has a quantum dualarity, which means that it only exists when something is there to observe it. So, if you're it's Ghost in Dead by Daylight. If you just happen to be looking in his direction, then this thing appears and it's like, I'm here because you perceive me and that makes me here. And so, like, it's got, like, an observed form, which is, like, it's got, like, its corporeal has a 30-foot speed, can do stealth checks. If it's unobserved, then it's incorporeal.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's really cool. It's great. I love it.
It reminds me a little of those aliens from Doctor Who that, like, you can never remember once you look away from them. And so, you know, you write down all over your body, like, I saw them. They're over here. They're doing this thing. Because as soon as you look away, you're like, wait, what was I doing here?
I love it. So
I also think it's funny because we have the unseen and now we have the seen. So, you know.
I mean, that's the seen conspiracy.
The scene compare, obviously.
It does look like a monster from Dead Souls, like a trash mob.
It does.
And I'm getting good vibes of thinking of throwing saw blades at it, you know?
Oh, gosh.
Yes. just be careful about calling it a trash mob because it's CR12. Like, that would be a fair fight for my Solarian and all of his friends. Or not my Solarian, my soldier, and, like, all of his friends.
Yeah. I mean, you took the appearance of a trash mob. You know, it's tricking you. Yeah.
So if you had to say there was a theme for this book, would you give it a theme?
Because
for me, it's bugs. There are so many insectoid things in here. There are so many bugs.
I think this book's theme is wild. Like this.
Oh, okay.
A lot of times, like, you see the Alien Archive stuff and, like, it almost feels very safe. And, like, there are things that are like, oh yeah, we've talked about this in other books before. Like, everything in here is, like, brand new. Like, this feels like almost like the Vast book. Like,
a lot of it's brand new. I mean, you still have proteans, you have psychopomps, you have a lot of things being pulled in, but they're also wild. Like you were saying, they're things that you don't see all the time. Like
the Chicken Little monster.
The chicken. I'm sorry, you'll have to explain. Yeah, the Chicken Little monster. Show
our fans the art on page 89.
Okay.
It looks like Chicken Little. It absolutely looks like Chicken Little. It's got, like, little tripod body, and it's got, like, the little speedly arms. It's got a white head with, like, a big crown on it. Like, it looks like the Chicken Little monster. They're called the psychonoids. Like, am I crazy? Doesn't it look like Chicken Little? It's got, like, an orange thing across its face, like a beak.
No, it does.
I didn't think about it until you said it.
Huh. I can't unsee it now. God damn. My problem is, Alex, drop the call. Just mute yourself. Do us all a favor. You've ruined this monster forever.
I ruin a lot of these monsters. but this one's actually playable. So if you wanted to play the Chicken Little monstrous humanoid, you absolutely could. They're really good at making spell gems and Solarian weapon crystals. They can do it in half the normal amount of time. They get bonuses on mysticism and physical science. They have they have four arms like a Kasatha. They have dark vision and they are resistant to sonic, which is something you don't see every day.
I'm surprised they didn't come with a paralyzing fear of the sky, but, you know.
Well, that's what the sonic resistance is.
Oh, I see.
Sonic is like moving through the air, yeah.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah, totally.
I do like that there's more Spectra. Spectra, another one of those, like, things that are unique to Starfinder. And I always, like, it's the equivalent of things that live between the stars in your hyperspace.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
They're also not magical. They're, like, technological, but it's basically magic because it's so advanced. But they're unique. And I do like seeing more of them, because hopefully that also means we'll see more of them in, like, published material.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. I agree 100%. I'm not gonna be honest, Vanessa. I'm really surprised that you didn't say that Moth Girlfriend was your favorite monster in this book.
The Sombrians?
Yeah, the Sombrians, exactly. The Moth Girlfriend. That art is definitely Moth Girlfriend.
Okay, this art is definitely Moth Girlfriend, but honestly, I don't like insects. It's one of the reasons that this book is, like, there's a lot of things that I'm trying, like, that I do like about it. I like the book overall, but I don't love insects. So every time I see insects, I'm like, and scroll right past that, skip.
So, I really like these because, like, the two art they picked are, like, sun and moon themed. Like, the white one has, like, the crescent moon, and the other one's got the big sun, and they can spaceflight. It's awesome. I like them.
That is cool. They're cool from that reason. They are the least insect triggery creature in this book for me, and I can get behind them. They're pretty cute, but there's a lot of insects in this book.
Yeah, you know what makes me laugh? Like the one that they show here, the Solmere one, the sun one. It's lawful neutral, but they're like basically butterflies, and Gesna is chaotic good. Like neither of they both they look kind of like butterflies. They're moths clearly, but like they very much play against the trope of like what Desna is. Like these are not Desna and Mons Fae. They are butterfly girlfriends.
So do you think that's a boon? Do you think that's like, oh good, I'm glad you didn't play to type? It seems like to me that seems like a detriment. I would want them to like incorporate and have a strong tie to Desna, but in their block, I don't see any reference to Desna at all.
I think if they were outsiders, I would expect them to have a strong tie to Desna. But as Fae, I'm okay with them not having it. I also think a lawful neutral Fae is interesting. This is almost like the Seelie Court and Unseelie Court that all the fans have said they wanted, but instead of it being all Fae, it's the Moth Girlfriends they're fighting.
I didn't realize that they were Fae, because there's also Fae Moths as Karinta.
Yeah, it picked them up from Pathfinder Society, right?
Yeah. By the way, their lifespan is super long. It's
like, really?
Yeah, they're anticipated like adult lifespan is like 200 plus 4d10 or something like that.
Oh my goodness!
All right, so officially, this is the Moth Girlfriend book. Like, this is the theme for this. You were asking Vanessa. The theme of Alien Archive 4 is Moth Girlfriend.
Okay, you know what? Then I guess I have to like it.
I mean, you don't have to, but
no, I do. I actually do like this book a lot. There's a lot of fun like story ideas because for me as a primarily adventure writer, I like to look at a creature and think of like what's the story behind it. How can I use this in an actual adventure? And I think that's why like I don't know certain ones I just get more like directly excited about. Like even just polyphonic gel is like just a CR one half ooze. It's a big nothing, but it's just so much fun. It's this ooze that's like silvery and makes sounds. And like, I could see a weird story moment where there's like someone you meet who's a magician, who's like a musician, who's working with polyphonic gel in their performance, like is like training it or something to accompany, you know, their band or something. Like, I don't know. It's super cool.
That is very true. I agree with that.
Oh yeah, I forgot Little Shop of Horrors was in here too.
Yeah, talk about Little Shop of Horrors. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's called the Harpy Jasmine on page 44. It's like apparently a creature in mythology for Lashento, and you know everything's psychic there. But I mean, just the art is like Little Shop of Horrors. It's not nearly as big, but it's. I saw that and was just taken aback to my youth.
Yeah, like all, but like it's the fact that that plant is smirking. Like, look at that. It is smirk. If the artist didn't do that, nobody would think it's Little Shop of Horrors. But it's like I'm gonna eat you. But so like now here's the thing though. Like, look, go back to that picture you just showed, Vanessa. All
right.
Little Shop of Horrors has drugs, which are basically medicinals that use the typical alien archive, the typical armory setup for like their stat blocks. They have prices. Why doesn't the other medicinals for the Agathians have prices? Why aren't they set up like this?
Oh, you mean the Harpy Jasmine? You were saying Little Shop of Horrors had it, and I'm like, there is no drug use in that musical. Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
I got very confused. But yeah, no, I see what you mean by the medicinals being set up in such a way that they have all those stats, and it's like, where is it in the other one?
Yep.
But yeah, Oh, well.
But I'm not going to rag on that for now. Have you seen the flying squirrel Cthulhu monster in this book that's adorable?
Which one?
Probably.
They're called the Vesporeans. They're on page 132. They're like, so there's an art of them all curled up, and they look like these cute little Sonic the Hedgehogs with like Cthulhu tentacle faces. And then they spread their bodies out and they fly like flying squirrels. It's so great. I love them. They're like,
okay. These are adorable.
The biggest sin in this book is that there's no rules for me to get a creature companion of them.
God, they're large. Ugh.
They're what? Oh my God, they're large.
They're really big.
Big Cthulhu squirrel. No,
this is Cthulhu's familiar. That's why. Because Cthulhu's so big, so they're like large to us. And it's like, Cthulhu's so like, good. Oh, little guy, you're so cute.
Yeah, like, oh, little guy. Oh my God, it's bigger than me.
Huh. I didn't get it by the description, but now that, once again, now that you pointed out, I noticed, huh. Man, I wish I could have saw that like that the first time. I'm just like, cool, blue thing, bye.
Flying Cthulhu squid. They're so good.
My Mindy Blow says, giant Cthulhu tree squirrels. Very excited. We are excited too, Mindy Blow, and we are excited too.
We truly are. We're probably too excited, but is there such a thing as too excited?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. How about are you too excited for the Warp Stitcher on page 136? That art. It's like they're like a giant crab dude with like a alien from like the movie Alien head, they've got like spindly arms and they're stitching human corpses to their back.
Oh God, I can't believe I'm putting this on the screen. Okay, look at your own peril. It's so bad. It's so bad.
He kind of looks like a Klandathu from the Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
Oh, so many bugs. Cool.
Did you see they have an ability to explain what they're doing to those people on its back? It's called a warp suture, and they use their claws threaded with strands of quintessence, the energy from planar adventures that is the energy between the planes that makes up the walls that separates reality. They use that to sew victims onto its body. They use the stuff the planar barriers are made out of to sew you to it.
Oh,
and that
can't be healthy for reality.
Apparently it's not. However, if you want to free it from its back, you have to hit a EAC 28 or a KAC 26, and the thread has 56 hit points.
Huh.
It's great. And unless the attack does slashing damage, it only does half damage.
Yeah, but okay, but you're also talking about a CR 14 creature. So by the time you're fighting it, even if there's one of them, even at the highest CR differential, you're still level 11. You got a lot of tools, okay? You got a lot of tools at that level. You can dish out some damage. That's not terrible.
It's so great.
But it's pretty cool though. So their player option is like warp shot ammunition. It's like special force ammunition. They have scattergun shells, regular heavy rounds, and mini rockets. A force-based mini rocket? Those are for those really serious ghosts, y'all. Those are like, well, there's a lot of ghosts in this building. It's not worth it. We're just going to shoot rockets at the building till the haunted building is dust.
That monster is truly not afraid of no ghosts.
It is kind of cool. It reminds me of the spiders in a way.
Yes.
Oh man, those things are scary.
Yeah, we had a bad we had a real bad time with those phase spiders.
Yeah, they're never good.
He bullied us hard.
Adventurous is probably going to deal with phase spiders or nightmare spiders or something soon. So hopefully they're not this bad.
I hope that they are every bit as bad as what James and I dealt with. We had to deal with a Blood Rager phase spider.
Oh gosh. That's not nice.
We had to deal with it when it was just a phase spider, but it killed our party Blood Rager and ate all of its blood and gained the Blood Rager's blood and started Blood Raging.
Okay, that's actually perfect. I would super do that as a GM.
Yeah, our friend Robin is a talented GM and a cruel mistress in the delightful arts of inflicting pain upon us.
Wait, that wasn't a phase spider. That was a bibboleth.
Oh, you're right. It was a bibboleth.
Which is another type of phasing spider. Splitting hairs.
Why? Why are all these spiders phasing? I don't like it.
They go the cracks between. So I don't know if you guys have anything more you want to talk about for monsters. I have one more monster that I want to say. Do you want to do one more round and then we'll talk about the extra rules of the appendixes?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why don't you start, Vanessa?
What? Why are you?
Go ahead, James.
I like the Swamp Strider. It looks like a friendly goat.
I like the Swamp Strider because its name is just Swamp Strider. I like it for the same reason I like the sentient purple orb. It's just so descriptive.
It's like, what's this thing? It's this thing that runs around the swamp. So it's the Swamp Strider. You're like, who put this human in charge of naming things? It's like you're fired.
You say that, and then like the screen for No Direction Beyond just cuts, and then it cuts to a picture of Jason Keighley sitting in his office going, Swamp Strider. That's exactly what we'll name it. That's what people will do. And then it goes back to us.
That's what people would call it. So obviously that's its name. And I'm like, dang it, Keighley.
Is he wrong? Is he wrong? People like the Avalon River in Great Britain, like, is basically named River in Celtic. Like, Avalon is Celtic for river. Like,
oh, people do this. Like, I know they do. It's the
Sahara
worst.
Sahara is Arabic for desert.
desert. Yeah.
It's great. People do this. And so, like, for me, seeing a monster called a sapient purple orb is just, like, it's true to nature. Like, that is what people do. We are not the average human is not as creative as we like to think they are. I agree. Swamp Strider, great stuff. For me, my pick is going to be with the Colan. It's on page 60. They're like, they look like the swamp thing.
That picture does look Swamp Thing-esque, yeah.
Yeah. And then the next picture is like they're actually like fey that are like fire elementals. I actually don't understand what that dude is doing there, because on the next page it's the iconic mechanic using his flamethrower and just having his day ruined by one of these. The reason I bring this up is because any fey of fire that is like this incorporeal is awesome. Like, more atypical fey, please. Love it. However, this is also another one of the monsters that affects from player options that don't really work right, because all mechanic tricks have a mechanic level associated with them, like the minimum mechanic level you need to be to take them. This entry doesn't list the minimum mechanic level needed to take them. So I'm assuming the answer is second, but because that's the most logical reason why you wouldn't write the number. But there definitely needs to be an errata that clarifies what level mechanic I need to be to take electromagnetic deflection and geomagnetic charge. Because those abilities sound dope, and I'm sure that I would want one at some point.
So, okay, my option is going to be the new elementals.
Actually, I take that back, because the one says you need to be 8th level and have electromagnetic deflection and energy shield, and the other one says you need to have energy shield. So maybe the one is like 4th and the other, I have no idea. They need to clarify. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so mine is the new elementals. They are starship elementals, which is just super cool.
Awesome.
These things, like, here's the deal. You're doing space fantasy, right? So you have dragons, you have elementals. I love having more than just starships in space combat. I am a big fan of space combat. I know a lot of people are not. I am, and I think the biggest thing is it's like we're tired of just shooting things that shoot back at us with more missiles. And this adds a whole other level of complexity. Now you have elementals going after you, which is super cool. And the more cool things you can do with space combat, I think the more attractive it gets, honestly. And it's not all just so mono experiential. I don't know if that's a word, but it is now. And so, you know, these things are across multiple tiers. Tier 1 halves, so you can use them right away. Tier 4, tier 10, there's graphs for existing starships that exist, so I guess you could, like, maybe like a Viscarium ship ran into a hunk of, like, the fire plane while traveling through the drift, and that's a fire elemental Viscarium ship. It's like, okay, why not? But I just think it's super cool. I don't know, I like the idea of doing more with Starship Combat, and they're even doing that in an Alien Archive book, which is fantastic.
Definitely. I would love to look at those and see if the stats compare to, like, the living starship rules in Starfinder or Starship Operations Manual. I'm willing to bet they do, but I'm just curious. Maybe someday I'll actually look into it, but not on this show.
The one downside, though, because I do like them, but I can still be critical of them. I can still like do that. Is that they still use like particle beams and missile launchers and stuff as their weapons, and I'm like, why wouldn't you just have like elemental, you know, gout or something, like just like elemental blast? I don't know, something a little bit more on theme. I know that they're trying not to make it like too related to any one specific element, so you can use these graphs on these and be like, okay, so here's how this is an air elemental versus a water elemental in space. But still, it seems a little weird to be like, and here's my high explosive missile launcher slash water. What? So I would have probably liked to have seen them work this rules in a different way. Because I know that as GM, like, I'm excited they exist. I'm excited they're going there. But as GM, there's no way I'm going to be like, and then it shoots its you know, explosive missile launcher at you. I'm going to be like, no. Then, like, a ball of ice heads towards your ship and suddenly explodes into a bunch of shards.
Now, the only time I can see that being cool is if the flavor you used was, like, a bunch of Efreeti from the City of Blast captured a giant fire elemental and literally strapped guns on it. That would be cool. But okay, I agree with you overall that, like, that keeping the gun names, I get why they did it. I don't think they had to. But if nobody has any other monsters you want to talk about, we should talk about the player expansion that's in this book. Because every Alien Archive has had a player expansion, a section in it. In Alien Archive 1, it was summoning. 2, it was polymorphing. 3, it was creature companions. 4, species graphs.
Yeah, so we talked about them a little at the beginning, but really, like, the length and breadth that they go to with these species graphs are pretty cool, especially because there's a bunch available at low levels, including level 1, level 2. Like, a lot of them are pretty low. There's a couple of them, like the prehensile tail graft, that's level 11. Like, that's the only level 11 one in here. That's the highest level one. But most of them are pretty accessible, which I think is really cool.
I love them and I hate them.
Why do you hate them?
Let me go why I love them first. Because I think that this feels like, to me, it feels like genetic augmentation in Starfinder, which I think is cool. I think that that's a trope in sci-fi that this game needs. And I think that you could do things by being able to say, like, oh, I have a Patra racial trait as a species graft, and because of that, my body now looks like this. And it feels very transhuman, which is a flavor I'm all about for Starfinder. I think that that tells lots of cool stories. When this book was advertised, a system of buying augmentations was not what I wanted from this. And that's why I don't like it. I think what it is good. Like, it goes to clarify in one point where, like, if you buy a species graft and you augment yourself with it, you count as having that racial trait for, like, feet prerequisites. So one of the examples is that if you purchase limited telepathy from, like, a Lashunta, you count as having limited telepathy for the extended telepathy feat from Starfinder Pact Worlds. And that's smart. Because it makes it so that you can have feats that require racial traits, and then all of a sudden those feats aren't really locked to that race. You know, that's not the only the hobgoblins can have armor training. It's anybody can have it, but for anybody else you need an augmentation to make your body work better for it, which is cool. When they were talking about this, I was hoping that Starfinder Alien Archive 4 was going to have a giant list of, like, alternate racial trait rules, almost like what the Advanced Race Guide did, but, like, maybe some more, like, generic ones so that you could swap things around with your actual races. Like, okay, well, if you have one of these are kind of equivalent, and, like, a really in-depth rule system like that. This system isn't bad, but this feels more equipment to me and it doesn't necessarily feel like it belongs in an alien archive. This, I mean, like, if this was in Tech Revolution, I wouldn't have bat an eye, especially if they called it, like, genetic augmentation, you know, or, right. Or DNA mixy masher, I don't know. But I think
you're not a fan of the system. You're just not a fan of where they put it.
I like the system. I don't know that this was the best book to put it in. And I think they could have done something cooler with the space that fit more in with the Alien Archive theme. Because the first Alien Archive was about summoning monsters in a monster book, which makes sense. The second one was about polymorphing into monsters, transforming into monsters in the monster book. The third one was about having the monsters as your friends. And this one is just randomly taking species and slapping themselves on your body.
I mean, that's kind of related to the polymorphing. It's making it more accessible as sort of a game mechanic rather than, well, what if I use polymorph to get that? Then can I have cheek pouches? And you're like, well, I don't know. Now you have like a thing that you can do. And they specify species graphs can be cybernetics, biotech, magitech, nanite enhancements, or any other form of augmentation. So you can even be like, hey, I want cheek pouches, but I want them to be like extra planar cheek pouches. Like, I want the advantage of a cheek pouch, but I don't want to look like a hamster, right? And so you can just, you know, you could just like, oh, I have extra dimensional space inside my cheeks because I'm a super spy. Awesome.
That's fair. Do it. Yeah. Like I said, it's not that I hate these rules. I think that they could have done something better with the space.
That
being said, I'm waiting for Dustin Knight to beg me to let his Kitsune Mystic in Teenage Wasteland take the prehensile tail graft, because I know that he wants his tail to be able to like pick stuff up. I know he does. And now that I've said this and he's listening live, I'm going to immediately assume that he's going to explode a post in chat in a little bit. And so when he does, we'll start laughing and you'll know.
Lava being in chat wants cheek pouches on their SRO.
Robot hamster. I think that's cool. Like I said, if I was going to pick something for what would have been here, I would have picked almost like, you know how Pathfinder second edition has universal heritages? Mm-hmm. I would have picked something like that, that was like literally like, hey, here's an option where if your character is from a low gravity world, here's an option if your character is from this, and then here's how you swap these out. Like, you know, maybe like going through and saying, oh, this is a major minor racial trait. This is a minor.
But none of that's defined though. That's the problem. Like, imagine how many pages that would take, because you've now got the core rule book plus three alien archives full of species that just have race traits and no defining of how powerful those are. And that's, I think, the reason that you can do it in something like Pathfinder Second Edition that already has all of these things siloed and defined. And so you can easily mix and match and swap them out. You just go, it's an ancestry feat or it's a heritage ability and anyone can take it. I think this is a smart approach to solve that problem of how do we give access to a tail for anyone who wants it, right? Mm-hmm. How do we allow anyone who wants it to get that armor savant because they want to like min-max their armor class, or, you know, get the elven immunities because they think those are cool for some reason. How do we do that? And I think this is a pretty smart way to do it.
Numbat 18 says Kitsune Warlock is being conspicuously quiet.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead. What do you think, James?
I mean, I think the system is after they introduced those alternate traits, this was, I think, a logical conclusion. And it's in a book where you have race, you know, different new species at it. I do have some issue with some of the power levels of the traits. For instance, if you give somebody stone cunning, that's just giving them a disability. It makes them look harder at rocks on a space. Actually not a benefit.
I mean, it doesn't like distract them from other things. They're just more easily able to identify stuff about rocks.
No, but it makes a person who bought those eye implants sad, because every time they walk around, they go, if this was stone, I might have saw something. The stone cutting work here? No. Oh, we're still in a spaceship.
I think it's hilarious that one of the options in this book is the Bolita spinal column. So that means that technically, if I wanted, I could give this to Dustin's Kitsune and he could roll up into a ball like Tails and like just
around. Please, why are you doing this? Why would you do this?
Don't ask me. Ask Joe Pacini. He was the lead developer on this book. It's his fault, not my fault.
Yeah, but stone cutting is a third level graft. Resist energy graft is a fifth level one, and that lets you ignore energy drain like you were an undead until it kills you.
Oh no, that's like that's the awesome Dampier ability.
One of those is much stronger than the other, and their item levels are very similar.
Yes. Another good one is Ferocious Charge, level 6. You spend 4,250 credits, and now you can charge with no penalty. It's literally a level 5 soldier class feature that you buy for money.
Yeah.
I mean, but they have those already, though, you know?
It's true.
I mean, even like you're talking about energy resistance, there's any energy resistance armor upgrades, or you can get it as a Solarian, like, ability, where you're like, I guess I'm just resistant to fire now. You're like, or slap that on your armor, whatever you want. So they already kind of have that in different ways anyway. I think it's just, I think it's more ways to get to the abilities, and I think that's not bad. Having something like stone cutting and negative energy resistance being the same level is probably not the best option.
Can
one of those trivializes encounters and the other one... I don't know. It does nothing.
You get a +2 enhancement bonus to notice unusual stonework, okay?
Can we talk about that? There's a level 2 augmentation that is natural weapons, and it gives you the natural weapons racial trait, so you just have claws or whatever for 1,000 credits. Like, what?
That's actually pretty good. That's
really
good.
Strong.
But the thing is, that sounds pretty normal to me, honestly. Yeah. Like, coming from, Cyberpunk and Shadowrun and stuff, like, those are very street samurai sort of things to do. Like, my street Sam has, you know, just like retractable claws like Wolverine, because I thought that was cool. Or Lady Deathstrike or something, because, you know, whatever. Cool, now you can do it like at low levels. Maybe even at level 1, if you want to go into, with Lava Bean recommend, huge amounts of debt to the chop shop doctor. Like, you know, you could work this out with your GM and be like, look, this is a level 2 ability. It's my whole character concept. Let me start at level 1 with it. And then I'll just send them payments of like UPBs and credits throughout the, you know, by the time I get to 3rd level, I'll have it paid off. And I
believe that's also a reduction in that type of fighting, because you could previously do that by getting a prosthetic limb that had a weapon implant and always displayed it, but I think that ends up totaling up to more than the cost of this implant.
Interesting. Yeah,
and again, if it's an easier way to get it or a better way to get it, I'm 100% for it.
Yeah.
Like, so, you mentioned before, the best part about this whole thing is it makes you eligible for feats that require certain racial traits, and for me, that is fantastic, because I, as you can probably tell from my story at the beginning of this episode, it drives me up the wall when there are really cool feats or abilities or unlocks or class features or whatever that are only selectable by certain species or species with certain specific traits. Drives me up the wall. And so having this as a solution is like, it's perfect. If my halfling wants the armor savant, whatever. If they want that graft, they can get it, and now I can get my damn defensive striking.
So a couple extra ones that I think are really cool in here. For 300 credits, you too can photosynthesize just like a plant. You program it into your skin, and your skin can make food for you. You just go out under the beach. It's basically that anime girl, the one who can't wear clothes because of she needs the like the fluid contact.
You mean Quiet from Metal Gear Solid 5?
Yeah, that one.
No, she's like an amphibian. She can't breathe without that. It's like SpongeBob when he lays in the middle of the field and goes photosynthesis. Photosynthesis.
Yeah. The other one I like is you can buy the Skittermander hyper racial trait as one. And so first of all, that's really good because it gives you one extra move action a day whenever you want it. But moreover, it's an augmentation to your heart, which implies Skittermanders are hyper because of their big hearts.
That's my cute. Gosh. And not just a giant amount of blood pumping through them?
Not just a giant amount of blood pumping through them.
Okay, so here's the thing. I was thinking about the your skin grows your food for you, and there's two ways to look at it. One is that you just don't need food because you're out in the wilderness. And the other one is you're just like, oh, a burrito. Just like eating your ass off. But actually, funny. That can be cool. If you're playing like a Dian Fossey type character who's going to go off and, you know, study weird creatures on alien planets, like, you don't want to have to bring a bunch of rations or figure out which plants are edible. Like, you're just like, I know, I will get this bio upgrade, and then I just don't have to worry about eating.
Yes, definitely. Did you have any favorite upgrades, James?
My favorite was stone cutting, because it's there, and I just I actually got a wizard in a Pathfinder game we're running to get stone cunning and actually started trap finding, which was just hilarious because that's not supposed to happen. The numeric bonus is just not good. Like, it doesn't enhance anything, so it's kind of a meme. So we can get it to work, it's hilarious. So I just like to see that the meme's alive here.
I think it's pretty cool that you can staple Strix wings to your back and have, like, big angel wings.
They can be anything. So they can be cybernetic, and you can have, like, cool angel from, you know, the Marvel comics, like, angel post-apocalypse wings that are all, like, metal and cool and stuff. Like, you could do whatever you want. It's really cool.
I respect that. But just so you know that if you ever see a character of mine who takes that, they stapled those wings to their back.
Oh, God.
So then, you know, that is the bulk of this book's content. The appendix, the next one is the graft appendix, which is like, oh, this is what Spectra does. The thing that's interesting about this one, though, is that a graft appendix in this book has the new class grafts for Biohacker, Witchwarper, and Vanguard. So if So if you want to make a Biohacker, Witchwarper, or a Vanguard creature, the rules are here in Alien Archive 4.
I have, and it's published, but I cheated. Just grabbed abilities that were cool and threw a couple on there.
I was scanning through the rules. They brought Pounce back.
There's live discovery happening right now. Yeah, no direction beyond.
It's when you charge, you can make a full attack in place of your normal melee attack. I thought they changed Pounce in Starfinder.
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I don't know if you can see my gears turning. Like,
I can see it. It's straight up Pathfinder first edition Pounce. When a creature charges, it can make a full attack in place of normal melee.
I could have swore that it worked differently in another book.
Okay, but here's the thing. It's not as scary, though, as it would have been in Pathfinder, because a full attack is like you take a bunch of penalties to all your attacks. So it just gives you an extra movement, essentially. That's not bad.
I just checked the Archives of Nethys. This is the first Starfinder book to have Pounce in it.
That is, like, incorrect. It's an Alien Archive 2.
Is it?
Yeah, they give examples of it there.
Okay.
Huh.
Also an armory with Operative's Pounce.
So your discovery is absolutely nothing. Okay, cool. Go ahead. I'm glad we went over that.
Pounce is a talent. That doesn't count.
Oh, you got me. I'm slain like stone cunning.
Yeah. However, you are right that the Dromaeosaurid in Alien Archive 2 has Pounce, and I'm just bad at this game, apparently. So can we compromise that we're both awful?
Yeah, no, I was just tripping because I was looking over the dwarves in Starfinder, and they have the hardy racial trait that also combines the hardy from the first edition, and you could give people poison immunity, ability to carry stuff, things that I think of dwarves instead of the meme stone cunning.
The meme. somebody at Paizo thinks stone cunning is amazing and that everybody wants it, and everyone's like, well.
Or is it a prerequisite to something? Is there some dwarven feat out there that's like, if you have stone cutting?
Improved stone cutting.
James, get off the call. Just turn your camera off. Get out of here.
Oh, you're getting kicked out too, James. Neither of us are allowed to be here anymore. Improved
stone cutting. Oh my gosh.
So I think the answer to that question is no, because I am pretty sure that if there was, it would have been in Character Operations Manual, where they added all of those, like, bonus content for species. Right. Remember, like, they did, like, feats and stuff?
Yeah.
I'm actually totally distracting right now, so I can double-check to see if there's anything for stone cunning in there.
Okay, well, you check it, and we're going to talk about other things.
No, they're all alternate racial traits. There's nothing in the game that requires stone cunning, except for James to meme on.
Okay,
on
so the person that has stone cunning is a dwarven cleric, whose perception's already dumb high, because it's a class skill and they have wisdom as a modifier, and they're like, great, I can find stuff despite the fact I have two points to put to my skills every level.
No, listen, the thing is that by having stone cunning, he doesn't have to tell you he's looking for things, he just finds it. His character does the work for him.
It just notices, you know,
the elf,
unusual stonework. Mm-hmm. You're like, wait a second.
Well,
that stone bulkhead is a little weird. No, that's metal. Oh, it's just weird looking then.
wrong thing in the ground. I understand. It's a very easy mistake to make the difference between metal and stone. You're right. Well, that's the content in Alien Archive 4. What did you guys think of this book?
I'm glad that I have it, and I'm glad I can pester my GM about getting a hobgoblin racial trait that isn't listed here, but is the exact same as a Vesk. That way I can get the darn feet I want.
You did it.
I like that the species graph has like 60 some odd species. It's really inclusive. I was expecting it to be like core, like when I first like saw the thing for it, I was expecting it to be the core species basically, and then get expansions as you go. But the fact that they're all there is really cool. Also more spectra and psychopomps.
I think that, again, Starfinder shows what a monster book should be. It's got a great mix of player content, and it's got a lot of cool monsters. There's some places where it can be polished a little bit with the formula, but in terms of expanding the game for players and GMs, I don't think that there's a book that Paizo has put out that is quite like this. A lot of the second edition bestiaries, they have like a couple rituals in the sidebars for GMs, and that's about it. It's mostly a GM's book, but this book is like, no, this is one of our three books a year. Come buy this book, everybody. Look at these monsters. Don't you want them?
I mean, from a business standpoint, it's a really smart thing that the Star Chamber has done, is said, hey, when we release a monster book, Alien Archive, like there's a bunch of player content in there. Mm-hmm. Even if it's things as silly as like the ink grenade. Like, why do I need a grenade that changes the color of something and does a tiny bit of acid damage? Why? Because it's funny to throw grenades that spew out hot dye at your enemies.
The answer is that the thing that players really want is to play Splatoon in Starfinder.
Right. But I think it's smart, and it's really also interesting and smart the way they've done it too, because now you can say, here's a creature and here's how you could here's a piece of equipment that they use, or you can play Monster Hunter and here's a piece of equipment that you might be able to make from its corpse, and either one of those is I think really helps honestly immerse players and GMs into the world of Starfinder and sort of give them permission to do this in other places that doesn't exist, right? So if you've got a creature and you're like, hey, I really want this creature's, you know, what can I do with the Swamp Strider's wool? And you're like, I don't know. And then you're like, you can make a, you know, environmental protection type of armor augmentation or something. Like, you can come up with something.
Yeah, I mean, the Kyorker armor was the thing that did it for me when I saw that. I'm like, oh my god, you can hunt a kaiju to go get super armor.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, did you have a favorite part of this book, James?
Oh yeah, it was the fact that there were 60 of those racial implants and also more spectra and more psychopomps.
Very cool. I thought this was a great quality book, too. I have one more question for you, Vanessa, before we get ready to sign out.
Okay.
How many hobgoblins do you think our GM is going to make you kill in order to staple some of his body onto you for that trait?
I don't know. I'm honestly hoping that I don't have to go murder a bunch of poor hobgoblins just to get the feat I want. I think it'll be reasonable to say, hey, this is a thing that makes your character tougher, which is a thing my character would want anyway, to, you know, stave off the endless chaos of the abyss and the uncertainty of death. And I think she would be interested in that. So I think it's kind of a natural development. And going back to the, it can be cybernetics or biotech or magic or whatever, I think there's a lot of options available to weave it into our story without being like, wait a second. I would like to take this feat, so stop the adventure. We gotta go find some hobgoblins. I need to murder, like, what is it, 14 of... I need 14 hobgoblin spleens, and then we can come back and do this.
Yep. And definitely options like that are best when they are things that will naturally happen during most games anyway. Mm-hmm. Like Grave Risen, where I'll just naturally get murdered twice in a single adventure.
Naturally.
Naturally. It happens. It's great. But, anyway, thanks for joining us on No Direction Beyond. Vanessa, do you want to tell everybody about our Discord and stuff?
Sure. If you enjoyed our show, you should join us on our Discord server, which is one of the least toxic places on the internet to talk about all things Starfinder as well as Pathfinder if you happen to play that game. You can read all, you can join it by going to nodirectionpodcast.com. While there, you might also check out a bunch of our blog content and actual play content. We have so much content now, I can't even keep it all straight, which is fine because I am not straight at all. So definitely go to nodirectionpodcast.com, see what we've got, and check us out and join our Discord, join the conversation. If you really, really like us and want us to keep doing hilarious shows like this, then maybe become a patron. The link is also on our website. So,
yep. And until next time, you should go beyond with no direction.